People who say it can't be done take a back seat to the people who are doing it. Then stay with us for three more Powerhouse Talk programs back to back. Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk at 7:30, The Janice Adams Show at 8, and La Voz en Breve with Mariel Fiore at 9. Monday evenings, starting at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul gives her State of the State address Tuesday, laying out her agenda for the year, even as the state faces a fresh round of federal cuts and as the governor faces a primary from within her own administration. Hear special coverage from the New York Public News Network live on Radio Catskill, hosted by David Lombardo from the Capitol Press Room, with commentary and analysis from Chantel Plummer and Morgan Hook. The State of the State address Tuesday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. When you walk into a thrift shop, top of mind probably isn't the owner. But today, my guest, clothing thrift store owner Tamar Dresner, will not only tell us about the evolution of her store Redress in Greeley, Pennsylvania, but will give us her background, including growing up as the daughter of the prominent civil rights activist, Rabbi Israel Dresner, who worked closely with Martin Luther King, and her mother, Toby Silverman, psychology professor at William Paterson University in New Jersey. Our childhoods inform and shape our adult selves. So this show is a journey of sorts, one I hope you'll enjoy. Here we go. Welcome to Catskill Character, Tamar.
Thank you so much for having me, Donna. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you on. So we're going to start with the story of how you came to be the owner of the clothing thrift store Redress in Greeley, Pennsylvania. And this story is going to take us from Manhattan to New Jersey, to the Village, to Beverly Hills, to Israel, and of course, to Hemlock Farms, to the house that has been in your family for many years and where you are currently living, taking care of your mother. Your parents were well-known and prominent people. It looks good on paper, right? But as their child, what was it like for you?
You know, great people cast a shadow. If you're a kid, you probably don't know how to get out from under that shadow. I sort of knew early on I didn't want to be in their shadows.
Well, I remember you telling me that in your house, being interesting was so important. I'd love for you to tell the listener, how did that play out for you?
Being interesting was the most important thing in my household. Being Jewish, of course, was number one. Being interesting would be number two. You know, at the dinner table, nobody could compete with my father. He had stories for how he was helping Israel and the Palestinians, how he was going to meet Yasser Arafat in Israel. Stories about Martin Luther King and getting shot at in a car in the 60s. My mother was doing research on women who had had breast cancer and the effects. She was a child psychologist. She was published. She was a well-known feminist. Dinner at my house was tough to elbow in to the conversation.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there was a lot of room for kid. You were thrust almost into an adult role.
There was no room for kid. The kid was not interesting in my house. You know, here's the picture I colored in today in art. Well, is it a picture of Martin Luther King? Because if it isn't, we're not that interested in it.
On top of that, there's also a definite controversy about the value of women in Orthodox Judaism. Your father grew up in that faith. Yes. How did you feel in regard to your value in your father's eyes?
So my father grew up Orthodox, but then chose to go to rabbinical school at a Reform seminary. He evolved a little bit, although I think he mostly yearned for the old days when men were down in the main sanctuary and women were up in the balcony behind a curtain. His brand of Reform was closer to conservative. So he never wanted to go back to Orthodoxy, but who he was as a person, he was so informed by his upbringing that he really, in his adult life, he just did not value women, including my mother. I mean, my mother was this amazing, gifted, bright superwoman. Yeah. And my dad still kind of, he was the big cheese in the family. She was second. My brother was third, of course I was fourth.
What about your mother? Did you get validation from her?
Absolutely. She always taught me to be myself, to even be more than myself, to shine. So I always had that from her. I thought of myself as a shining little star in the house, and my father would just walk by me like I didn't exist. Very mixed messaging.
You told me, Tamar, that you and your brother kind of raised yourself because your dad wasn't around a lot of the time, and your mom believed in letting you go out on your own. She wanted you to explore, quote unquote. That must have had its pros and cons, no?
Absolutely. Being a latchkey kid in the 1970s and the 1980s, that was all I knew. First of all of my friends' parents worked, the mother and the father. So that was not that strange. My mother wanted me to find my identity and my purpose early, and she wanted me to be self-sufficient. She wanted me to be resilient. So it was not unusual for Avi and I to leave in the morning for school at 8:30 and to come home at 6:30 at night. You know, not even. We'd go to a friend's house for dinner. We wouldn't come home till 9:30 at night. And these were the days you walked everywhere or you took your bicycle everywhere. It wasn't like it is today with helicopter parenting. There were no cell phones. So I was very independent very early on. And I was very precocious because I wasn't really getting any attention from my father. So I thought if I cultivated this little background as a petty thief, maybe he would see me.
Right. You became a shoplifter.
Yeah, I became a big-time shoplifter.
Mm. Kind of ironic that you own a store and people are probably shoplifting.
Karma's a bitch.
I don't think you deserve it because look why this happened. You know what I mean? You didn't really have any say in the development of this chain of thought.
Exactly. You know, I was the inadvertent shoplifter. It was interesting, but it was the thrill.
One thing that your father did value was movies. You told me about that. To the extent that he felt that movies could change the world. So it's no surprise that movies also played a big part of your life. And that after seeing the movie Grease, you decided that you were going to become a famous screenwriter, which is a good way to get your father's attention, perhaps. No?
100%. That has to be how I formed that idea. I remember coming out of Greece in the summer of 1978, standing there on the sidewalk. I didn't want to be Danny Zuko or Sandy. I wanted to write it. I'm not quite sure how I came up with that. But I did.
So you weren't kidding. And you ended up going to the Tisch School. Very fabulous school. And you said that going there was the greatest time in your life. You told yourself that you were going to be the next John Hughes.
Yes, absolutely.
And we were talking about this earlier. It's fascinating because it's like you didn't get value, so you had to value yourself, like overvalue yourself. You're not just going to be a good screenwriter. You're going to be John.
Yes, I'm going to be the next John Hughes, an Academy Award winning John Hughes.
Right.
I've never won an Academy Award.
You could probably picture yourself up there, right? Do you have any old acceptance speeches?
My acceptance speech for the Academy Awards was one of the pieces of writing that got me into Tisch at NYU.
Oh, my God.
My acceptance speech for the 1995 Academy Awards.
Amazing.
Because I was accepted to Tisch in 1989. So I wrote my 1995 acceptance speech, best screenwriter. And that was one of, I think, three pieces of writing that got me accepted early decision to the Tisch School for the Arts.
So what happened after you graduated?
I ask myself this all the time. What happened? I graduated NYU early in 1992. I was 20. I finagled a job before I graduated at a TV show called Beverly Hills 90210. I moved to LA in November of 1992 to find that the production team who had hired me from Beverly Hills 90210 had all been fired. So there I am, 20 years old, no job, no car, no apartment, no prospects. And I had to figure out, how am I going to do this? I've got to sell a screenplay. So I pounded the pavement for 1 year and 9 months and change. I rented an apartment in LA. I said to myself in November of 1992, when I have wallpapered this bedroom with rejection letters, I will reconsider being the next big Hollywood screenwriter. I could never have imagined. The bedroom seemed enormous to me. July of 1994, I am putting the last piece of paper, 8.5 by 11, I'm fitting it into the last available space. 1 year and 8 months it took to wallpaper the walls of my entire bedroom with rejection letters from studios, agents, actors, managers. It was brutal.
Oh my God.
It was surreal to me, you know, standing there looking around the room, you know, dear Ms. Dresner, dear Ms. Dresner, dear Tamar, thank you so much for your submission. However, hundreds of them. I have them to this day.
Why would you keep those?
You know, because when I'm 95 and I've sold 9 of my screenplays and I'm accepting an Academy Award in 41 years, I can look back at all of those rejection letters and say, see, they were wrong.
Could you do it a little sooner? Because I don't have that long.
I'm going to try.
I'm really happy to hear you're still doing screenwriting, but I just wanted to say very quickly that, like your mother, you moved to a kibbutz in Israel. You met a man who was to become your husband, who was escaping from the Scottish gang life, and he wanted to stay at the kibbutz forever. You wanted to come home. How did this resolve itself?
Moved to kibbutz in October of 94. I needed to get my sense of self-esteem back so that I could go back to LA knowing, okay, I have wallpapered one bedroom. Let me go back and do it all again. So I thought, let me go do an ulpan on a kibbutz. It's 5 months. I'm going to pick mangoes at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'll be reinvigorated. I got to kibbutz on October 4th of 1994. I met Mark, who would become my husband, on October 20th. Mark did not want to leave kibbutz. I told him straight up, I'm going back to LA. I'll give you a year. You can come with me or you can stay here in Israel. 1995, Mark came back with me on a tourist visa. At that time, they were checking up on you. So although he was Scottish, he was not from a dangerous country. In January of 1996, Customs and Border Patrol is calling for his flight information out of the country. So we said, is there any way around that? If you get married, he'll get a green card. He can stay. Oh, wow, that sounded like a really good idea at the time. Let's get married.
You have these two unfortunate similarities with your mother, one being divorce and the other is breast cancer, which very happily you survived. You are now living back in Hemlock Farms, taking care of your mother, and you still think of it as your happy place. So we're going to stop here, take a break, and come back. This is Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Tamar Dresner.
Legal scholars say President Trump broke international law when he attacked Venezuela.
The cornerstone of the UN Charter is Article 2.4, prohibiting exactly the kind of use of force that we saw. The claim that this was self-defense is just implausible on its face.
But does it even matter when breaking those same laws have little to no consequence? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, legendary activist Angela Davis. From feminism to racial and economic justice, Davis has been a key figure in social justice movements for more than 50 years. Now, she's inspiring a new generation of activists. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Tamar Dresner. In the first half of the show, Tamar told us a bit about her history, growing up the daughter of Rabbi Israel Dresner, well-known civil rights activist, and Toby Silverman, psychology professor at William Paterson University in New Jersey. Tamar was sure that she was going to be a successful screenwriter, but after receiving one too many rejections from Hollywood, she left California and returned to the East Coast, then went to Israel to live on a kibbutz, and met a man who she married upon their return to the U.S. Long story short, like her parents, she divorced and had to regroup. We're picking the story up here. Let's go. Tamar, I'd like to hear about your career as a massage therapist, becoming a Buddhist, and of course, we want to hear all about Redress, your clothing thrift store in Greeley, Pennsylvania. So let's start with your career as a massage therapist.
I did try for another decade to be a screenwriter. So I didn't become an adult really until I was 35. I refused to let go of that dream of being a screenwriter. I thought if I got a real job, that was capitulating, that I was really saying, okay, you know what? I'm grown up now. I'm never going to be a screenwriter. Let's become a doctor. My form of becoming a doctor was going to massage school. It was something that I was always interested in. It was always something I was great at. I massaged my entire family's feet when I was a little girl. So went to massage school in 2007 for pain management. I became a medical massage therapist, and I still do it part-time. So it's 18 years now. I can't say anything bad about it. I have loved my career in every way. As you get older, you need a second career again because your body starts to get tired.
Right.
Your energy starts to flag, and you need to do something more age appropriate, which is where the thrift store sort of segued perfectly.
How did you become a Buddhist?
I gained 20 pounds, hired a personal trainer who happened to be a Buddhist, so I became a Buddhist.
I see.
I think that's a common story. He was Jewish. He was from Brooklyn. He had the same suburban middle-class background that I had.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Vassar. He had gone to Columbia and got a master's in clinical nutrition. He was super overeducated, and he became a personal trainer. Just like I, you know, got a BFA from Tisch when I was 20 for $100,000, and I became a massage therapist. Yeah, my personal trainer became my best friend, Scott. And Scott was a Shinyoen practicing Buddhist, a Japanese sect of Buddhism, esoteric Mahayana Buddhism. And the first time I trained with him, I said, you know, tell me about your life. Tell me your history. Oh, I grew up in Brooklyn, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to be a screenwriter. Oh my God, I wanted to be a screenwriter. Blah, blah, blah. He became a Buddhist. Oh my God, I was always interested in Buddhism. Spiritually, Judaism never cut it for me. Also because I just had this disastrous relationship with my father. The fact that he was a rabbi and was so well regarded in the community, in the synagogue, I could not run fast enough or far enough away from Judaism as an adult. I go to Pesach, I go to Passover, I have potato latkes on Hanukkah, we do gifts. Culturally, I'm very Jewish. But spiritually, I always wondered, when you're fighting with your husband, Judaism says crickets. Judaism doesn't, as far as I know, Judaism doesn't tell you anything about how to get through an argument with your husband. Went to this Buddhist temple in White Plains, Westchester, and sure enough, they actually have an opinion about what you should do when you're fighting with your husband. And it was revelatory to me that they're telling you how to get through your everyday life, not how to, like you have to do this, you have to do that. here are some suggestions that might make your actual life a little bit easier for you. It was just so practical. Judaism was always like reading out of the phone book. It just didn't touch anything inside. Didn't touch me in any way at all. Buddhism came in and, you know, I just felt it in my heart. It's the first time I decided I wanted to try to be a good person. Judaism, of course, has this enormous capacity to teach you how to be a good person. Tikkun Olam, repairing the world, is an enormous concept in Reform Judaism. But I was raised in such a hypocritical household that it didn't seep into my pores. Mm. But I did want to be a good person. It must have seeped in some way, because I did turn to Buddhism to try to help the world, not just to help myself when I was having an argument with my husband. How can I make the world a better place?
Oddly enough, Judaism led you to Buddhism.
100%. My personal trainer was a Jewish Buddhist.
Yeah.
And I became a Jewish Buddhist.
Do you think there's a connection, Tamar, between all of the things you've done in your past to the fact that you now own a store where people come to not only shop, but as you told me, they sit on your blue velvet couch and talk to you? Do you think there's a connection between all these things?
I think there's a through line really to my entire life. Now that I look back, I don't think anything is an accident now. I think it's all sort of karma. If I had become a successful, rich, Academy Award winning screenwriter when I was 20, when I graduated NYU, I would not have been mentally prepared to have fame or success early. So now having the thrift store, I think the thrift store is a way, in a way, is changing my life and is going to enable me to help other people change their lives. I think it's a full circle.
I wanted to talk about your clients. I know that you have a great cross section of people from every walk of life come in there. What do you think is the most important thing about having a clothing thrift store?
You can thrift anywhere and get a new with tags $500 dress for $25. You can do that at my store. You can do that at Goodwill. You can do that at Salvation Army. You can do that anywhere. What makes redress redress is, first of all, a huge part of the shop is dedicated to environmental education. So don't throw that garment out because it has a stain or a hole. Whatever you have that you think of as garbage absolutely still has value. I have a textile artist, Karen Dosh, who works for Redress. She will take your old stained t-shirt that has an awesome peace sign on the back. She will cut out the peace sign and sew it onto a custom denim jacket for you. So now the stained, torn t-shirt didn't go in a landfill. You have a one-of-a-kind denim jacket. Karen is 72 years old. She's retired. She has found a total new purpose for her life. And it's really about teaching people old stuff can have value. Damaged stuff can have value. Not only can it have value, it can exceed something that's newer in value. It's a sort of a cultural thing. Women are taught you're beautiful, you're hot, you're sexy until you're 40. Now we're done with you. The entire culture is obsessed with youth and beauty. Well, what happens from 41 to 99? Those are the women I want in my store, 41 to 99. You think you're not beautiful anymore? You think you're not valuable anymore? come into redress, we will show you that you have value. You will sit on that blue velvet couch and you will walk out of redress a new person. To me, that's the most important thing about redress, giving the garments a new life and giving people, allowing people to fulfill their potential, whatever their age is. 85, you walk out looking fabulous. We're going to give you a makeover. We're going to put makeup on you. We're going to put you in an outfit that you would never have chosen for yourself. And you are going to feel like $1 million.
You don't have to write a screenplay to have value. Look what you're doing. You're helping people to see value in themselves, see value in what how they shopped, see value in so many things. And in turn, I hope you're seeing the value in you.
I am.
Okay. We're running out of time, unfortunately. But I was going to ask you at the end of this interview, do you think that the store has had a huge effect on you? And you answered the question already. It has had a huge effect on you. And, you know, I just want to say that I love that your shop offers not just great thrift, but also a place of acceptance, an opportunity to be heard and seen like you weren't when you were at home with your father. And I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. I've really loved having you on.
Thank you so much, Donna.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today has been Tamar Dresner, owner of the clothing thrift store Redress in Greeley, Pennsylvania. The website for Redress is redressbytamar.com. She also has a Facebook page, an Instagram, TikTok, Redress by Tamar, all of them. Catskill Character is on every Saturday except the last Saturday of the month when my radio husband, Greg Triggs, takes over the 10:30 time slot. Please join us then for more fabulous tales from fascinating characters of the Catskills and beyond. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Sullivan County's social host law, Jared's Law, makes it illegal for anyone 18 or older to provide alcohol or cannabis to minors. Named for a local teen killed in a drunk driving accident, Jared's Law ensures that adults are held accountable, with penalties including fines and even jail time. Parents and guardians are still the number one deterrent to underage substance use, and Jared's Law helps keep our kids safe. Paid for by Catholic Charities.
Hey there, I'm Jason Dole. Before New York Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address Tuesday, live on Radio Catskill, the New York Public News Network's Albany correspondent share what they'll be watching for. I talked to Samuel King Monday night on the local edition, and Tuesday morning on Radio Catskill, Tim Bruno will be joined by WNYC's Jimmy Vielkind. The State of the State address marks the start of the budgeting process in Albany, which in turn determines what legislation will ultimately pass this year. And since we all want to know what is and isn't happening in New York's capital, this is a great time to check in with these two Albany reporters. It all starts with pre-speech coverage of the State of the State on the local edition with me, Jason Dole, Monday evening at 6 and on Radio Catskill with Tim Bruno, Tuesday morning at 10. Then, special coverage of the State of the State address itself from the New York Public News Network, hosted by David Lombardo, Tuesday afternoon at 1, right here on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
So here's the deal. Public radio is now operating without federal funding, and your support matters more than ever. One way to help is to donate that car, truck, or old motorcycle in your driveway. You clear out some space and help keep trusted news coverage alive in your community. The process? Simple, free, even tax deductible. Just head to this station's website and help us keep this work going together.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org. WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill.
Local news, culture, and NPR.